We are on the air. This is Lynn Free on our Monday night planetary healing hour, otherwise known as conference call. And we welcome everybody who is listening on BBS Radio right now. And we are having a simulcast between a conference call, a telephone conference call, and the BBS radio line. And we've been doing this, I suppose, for about a year and a half now on the conference call. And we're doing something somewhat unusual. And if you're listening for the first time, we invite you not to believe anything, but to check it out and maybe even check it out over time to see if you can resonate or connect with what we're saying we're doing. And that is, we are being a portal during this hour. I suppose a portal is the right word. I don't know if I should be... No, it is. Let's see. Is it 6 o'clock yet? 5:59. Actually, I think people are going to be coming on BBS at 6. So I shouldn't really start until 6, even though he puts us on at 5 minutes early. So, hi there. This is Lynn Free. Welcome to the conference line, our Monday night conference call.
This is Wayne coming on late. Sorry about that.
Hi, Wayne.
Diane in Mountain View is here.
Hi, Diane.
Hi there. I'm Dean in Palo Alto. Oops, sorry. Hi.
Hi, I'm Dean.
Hi.
Oh, my God, they're beeping in. Beep, 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 beep. See, I knew they're all coming in at 6. So now we'll do our official introduction on the BBS radio network. This is Lynn Free, and I'm in Los Angeles, and we are having an hour of what I call interdimensional connection. And for those of you that are listening for the first time, we have a simulcast between a conference call where we have a number of people that have been on this call for quite some time. I say quite some time, I don't mean today, but repetitively over a period of time. And those of you who are listening on BBS, and this call is intended to be a portal between us as humans and those energies in other dimensions and those intelligences in other dimensions. And if you're tuning in for the first time, I've had this unusual experience of being contacted by intelligences in other dimensions who proved to me over a period of time that they were real and they were positive and that there was a responsibility of having this kind of communication, that it was somewhat unusual on this plane to have it, and trying to learn how to best utilize this for the benefit of other people. And this conference call was one of the ideas I had that seems to be working. And the reason it works is because on this call, aside from my voice beaming out from your computer, if you pay attention to the energies during the call, you may find the energies shift in your physical space. And that energy shift in the physical space has in my channelings, have told me that's them beaming in. So if you experience an energy shift, you might consider that as a possibility that this is not just me doing it. I have some support and team in other dimensions that are tracking this call, and they actually want to connect with you. They want to be a companion, and they want you to be familiar with them. And part of that is becoming comfortable with the idea that, first, that they exist, and second, that they're positive and you can trust them. So if you're listening for the first time, this is a call to make that evaluation for yourself. And for those that have been on the call regularly, I know that many of them, if not all of them, are already feeling the energy. Now, it's interesting, when we started doing this call, the energy of this vibratory field coming into one's space didn't happen right away. It happened like towards the end of the call or in the middle of the call, and people kept coming in. They kept noticing the shift, and over time, the energy would come in sooner and sooner and sooner, to the point now that oftentimes I feel the energy before the call, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. I feel there's already a kind of coming together of energies.
All callers are muted.
I just muted everything. A coming together of energies that's happening before we actually connect on the telephone line. So, to me, there's an indication here that the premises of what we're doing is actually working. And that is that even though we have a group of people, and we'll have them say hello in just a moment, we have a group of people on a telephone line, and we have a group of people on BBS radio, the premises is that we are creating a communication of the parts of ourselves that are in other dimensions. We're reconnecting with those parts. And for many of us, we've been very estranged from those parts of ourselves for a good portion of our lives, if not most of our lives. And we didn't even know they existed. So the first step is to create the thought that maybe you exist as more than just a physical body. Maybe you exist in other realms. And if you don't have any experience to that part of your existence, then it has to be a postulate. Then you have to say, how can I experience? How can I know? How can I find the part of me that exists outside of this physical body? And outside of my emotions, outside of my intellect. Where does that exist if I can't see it or feel it? And so if you've never experienced that or proven to yourself that that exists, then part of this call could be considered your own experiment to see if you can connect with that part of yourself during these calls. And there are indications. The thing about it is there's indications that you can reverse engineer, and that's how I do it. I reverse engineer things. I reverse engineer with my own intellect, my own mind, how things have to be working if thus and thus happens. For example, a lot of my life I've had what's called synchronicities, where things magically come together in what looks like coincidence, but couldn't have been coincidence because the probabilities were too far out. And the probabilities of having a number of these things happen, even in a short period of time, is even more far out. So I had the question for a long time, how does the universe work to create synchronicities? How could things come together? And I remember at one time I said, well, this is just God making things happen. But I didn't really understand that. I couldn't quite, you know, that was like just begging the question. So how does God make things happen? How does it all work? And I did start to get the idea that maybe I'm existing somewhere else in addition to existing here. And maybe the part of me that exists somewhere else is active. And it's responding to, even though I can't see it directly, it's responding to the small me that's down here. It's responding to my intentions. It's responding to my feelings. And it's got kind of like doing its own thing connected to me, connected to my thoughts. And so I worked with this idea, and it seemed to be accurate because when a synchronicity would happen, usually it would have some connection with something I was doing down here, something I wanted, somebody that was good for me to meet, or something that was in a flow of something in the physical. And but I could never make them happen out of my willpower. I could never say, okay, willpower, give me a synchronicity today. In fact, there were days that I would do that. I would just go out and say, okay, I'm ready to meet somebody, and it would not happen. So I started to pay close attention to when synchronicities would happen. And I noticed that it would happen when I was on a flow going from A to B. And there was an energy on the flow, like I had an appointment or I was traveling somewhere specific. And in the middle of doing that, something would just be by my side. And suddenly, where did that come from? And it was something impossible, and yet it happened. So I couldn't just go out and say, okay, God, give me a synchronicity. And it wouldn't, I mean, I can't even think once if I said that to myself where it would happen. So it would happen off to the side, but it was still connected to my intention. So now I'm learning about creation in this realm. It's kind of a high level of creation. It's kind of like, how do you create in this realm using this ability when you can't directly control it? You can't tell it to do this, and it does it. It just always happens on to the side. So I will say I'm still not mastered this, because there's still a lot of things that I would like to happen that haven't happened yet, and I'm still working on creating the circumstances where the synchronicities flow in to make them happen. But I can share with you one of the first synchronicities I had. And this is when I was younger, and some of you, I don't think I've told this story before. I decided I wanted to learn what life was about, and I was living in Berkeley, and I had been in a rock and roll band, and I had been in a duo with a woman who was singing some of the songs I had written, and I kind of modeled myself at the time after singer-songwriters like Bob Dylan and Cat Stevens and Woody Guthrie, and I said, I want to learn about life. So the way that was the way for a singer-songwriter to learn about life is to go on the road. So I packed a backpack, and I went out to University Avenue in Berkeley, and I started hitchhiking. And I felt pretty vulnerable. I never did anything like this before. And I was somewhat of a nerd. But I remember thinking to myself, if there's a God, I want this trip to prove it to me. So at the time, I had a dog. And my dog was quite young. And my dog was with me. And there I was hitchhiking. And I ended up, my first stop was to visit an old friend of mine from high school who was living in Washington, Seattle, Washington, going to the University of Washington. And I stayed at his place, and it was illegal to hitchhike in Washington. So I went to the university bulletin board, and I was looking for a ride to Vancouver, and I was going to visit another friend of mine from college in Vancouver. And I saw on the bulletin board there was a guy named Ira who was driving, going from Seattle to Vancouver, and I called him up, and he said he was going to be leaving in about a week, and that he would call me back, and he would be happy to take me to Vancouver. So I stayed another, I don't think it was actually a week, I think he said a couple of days. I stayed a couple of days, and I never heard from him. I had lost his number. I went back to the bulletin board. It was gone from the bulletin board. So I said, to heck with it, I'm going to hitchhike anyway. And I stood at the freeway on-ramp, and I waited probably 2 hours, and this car pulls up, and the driver rolls down his window and says, "Hi, are you Wynn?" And I said, "Yes, how did you know?" He says, "Well, I'm Ira, and I remembered you said you would be hitchhiking, and you said you had a dog, and I thought this must be you." So he said, "I'm leaving tonight. Why don't you get in the car, and I will be taking you to where you want to go." Now, I should mention something, and that is, before I left, I would go and to the university, and I'd let my dog off the leash. And my dog was an Afghan, and there was another couple that I met that also had an Afghan. And our dogs were playing together, and they gave me their number, and they invited me to visit them, and we had a connection. And I lost their number, so I didn't visit them, and I just forgot about it. I was, you know, to me, at that time, it was like, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be, so I figured I wasn't meant to be. So Ira is driving me in his car now. He's picked me up, and we're driving around, and he's going to the store, he's going to this place, he's picking this up, and finally, he said, "Listen, I'm going to go say goodbye to two friends of mine. Why don't you come in? I think you'd enjoy meeting them." And he takes me into this house, and there was the two people that had the Afghan that I lost their number. Their names were Joe and Christine, and we ended up just having a great time, and I said, "How could this be? How could, you know, out of all the people in the world, I pick a guy on the notice board, and he's taking me to visit the very two people that I wanted to meet and lost their number." And interestingly enough, a few years later, I was back in Berkeley, and I ran into Joe and Christine again. In fact, I kept running into Joe. I would be at the line at the DMV, and Joe would be in the line parallel to me, just about as far as I was. And just coincidentally, Joe ended up working at a candle company about two blocks from where I was living. And, you know, I never understood exactly what, if anything, I was supposed to do with Joe. And I just kept running into him. I probably would have looked deeper now, because obviously what I've learned is he and I, the way I would look at it now, is he and I had to have had a vibrational connection from other lifetimes, and that our high selves, or that part of us that's in other dimensions, had communicated and created circumstances for us to get together, and we created a meeting in the physical. And this is the way it works. But, I mean, look at what I had to do. I had to go hitchhiking. I had to go completely random. And I had to have this crazy experience with Ira. So I had so many circumstances like that in my life that it just said, what is going on here? How does this work? How can this work? It seems so outside of physical laws. And I'm sure many of you have had the same experience. Well, the way that I now explain it to myself is that we exist as a hologram. We exist in multi dimensions. And right now, we are bringing our holograms together. We on this line are merging our holograms and creating one hologram, or close to one. It's fuzzy because it's never perfect. But in the creation of moving our energies together like that, there's an experience that happens that we can feel. And Jesus called this, when two or more are gathered, I am also present. What happens is we create a what might be called a big light on the other side, a searchlight. And then, with that searchlight, we create a beacon for other beings to see us. Now, when we create this beacon, we can also create positive and negative beings to see us. So we have to be very highly intended to only want to connect with positive beings, even though we're seen by the negative ones. And so over the past 5 years, I've had this experience of having these positive beings, or what I believe to be positive, and then everyone's welcome to draw their own conclusion, to make verbal connection with me and explain to me how they operated, and that when we would connect this group energy together, they would join with us. And when they join with us, there's an experience that is hard to explain in physical reality terms. There's a stillness. There's a movement through the chakras. Some of you are feeling an energy around your head. Some of you can feel that energy sitting down on you from other dimensions. And it's kind of an intuitive feeling, and yet it's very real. And every time we come on this conference call, we have a reoccurrence of this feeling, and it becomes a reference point. Now, if you're on the call for the first time, or you haven't had this experience, then that is okay. I'm describing something that you can be open to. If you were going to look for the experience, you could shut your eyes and look at the space just above your head. And when I say that, some of you get goosebumps. Some of you are feeling the space above your head. But it's an unusual feeling, because it's not a feeling, a physical feeling. It's not a normal feeling that you identify with as a human. And you can actually, by your intention, send the energy upwards above your head. And then imagine that all our energies that we're sending upwards are joining together. And we're creating that beacon. And we are seen, and we can invite those group souls to join our energies. Now, when I first started talking with these group souls, and of course, I'm not going to tell the story again. You guys have heard it so many times, but it's on the website. If you go to higher-vision.org, you can hear the story, you can read the story, you can listen to some of the conversations. There's a subset to that website called Conversations with My Girlfriend, and you can actually read how it all started for me and the original channelings. And anyone who even begins to take this seriously and think that it might be real should investigate those websites, because this is not something anyone should believe because I say so. Even if you have an experience, even if you're feeling the energy, that's more reason to study the websites, because how do you know it's positive? How do you know you can trust it? You have to take everything in about this and use your own discernment to make your own conclusions. Commencing in 2002, I had a voice speak to me through a personal relationship that identified itself as the Council of Elohim. I looked up the word Elohim, and I came up with definitions like the God of the Old Testament, the Creator God of this realm, and when I asked them, they said they were the same. So I started cross-referencing and looking on Google the word Elohim, because I said, you know, I want to understand who this voice says they are, and are they who they are, and can I trust them, and what is their intention? I had all those questions for quite a few months, and I made a practice of tape recording all the conversations and just saying, I'm going to decide over time what's going on here. One of the things I discovered as I was Googling things on the internet was some writing by a fellow by the name of Philip K. Dick. And Philip Dick was a science fiction writer who was, during most of his life, he was writing for, I don't know if you guys remember, Amazing Stories, all those little science fiction magazines that would be on the bookstore shelves, but they were magazines, and they had 10-page stories. And he wrote some books, but his books never got to be successful during the course of his life. And then, after he died, his books became major Hollywood movies, like Blade Runner was one of them. And, let me see, there was one with Arnold Schwarzenegger in it, which I can't remember the name. But they were always really kind of deep, provocative movies. And Philip Dick lived in Berkeley, which... We were probably there at the same time. He was living in a fairly low-income place, writing away. And as I read the story of him, and of course the reason I found him is because I did a Google search on the word Elohim. And something he wrote had the word Elohim in it. And I found that he had written some things of his own experiences, and it seemed like it was channeled material, and it seemed very much matching everything that I had learned myself from writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce and the channelings that I had done through Daphne and Terry, and where there was this idea that our planet and this realm was in trouble, and that these intelligences that we're talking about, these intelligences that are meeting us right now as we're talking, that are joining with our energies, were trying to lift this realm. And it was very difficult. And there were many, many of these intelligences that chose to take incarnations here and got lost in this realm for perhaps millions of years. And maybe some of you who are listening tonight are some of those people that got lost in this realm. And that even though you came here as a high being or a being that didn't need this experience anymore, once you're in this realm and you incarnate here, you forget everything. And a couple little mistakes, and boom, your energy is now trapped. Your energy has gotten caught up and attached to other energies in this realm. And once your energies get attached to energies in this realm, then you're bound to the process of reincarnation till you can unattach those energies. And I did a search on the word Elohim, and I came up with something that Philip Dick wrote in 1978, living in his little room in Berkeley, probably feeling very isolated and insulated and separated, and busy using his imagination to write all these science fiction stories, probably smoking marijuana with a small group of friends, and writing something that describes almost exactly the circumstances that I just described to you concerning beings from higher dimensions that have come into this realm and gotten stuck. So I thought I would read that. I read this some time ago, and in fact, I did it in a channeling. I asked about it, and they said that Philip Dick was, in fact, an Elohim who had come into this realm and gotten stuck here, and they were connecting with him, even though at the time of his life it was far more difficult to make that known to other people. So he did it in his writings. And here is 1978 Exegesis by Philip K. Dick. Now, you may not understand all these words. Even I don't. He's a very smart guy. But you'll get the idea. The belief that we are plural forms of God voluntarily descended to this prison world, voluntarily losing our memory, identity, and supernatural powers, all of which can be regained through anamnesis, and then it's in parenthesis, or mystical conjunction, is one of the most radical religious views known in the West. But it is known. It is regarded as the great blasphemy. Replication of the original sin mentioned in the first book of Adam and Eve and in Genesis. For this pride and aspiration, we are told by our Orthodox religions, our original fall and exile and punishment, our being taken from our home, the garden land, and put into the prison was inflicted on us. Now, remember, this is not him saying what's true. He's saying this is the Orthodox view. They wish to be equal to, like us, the Elohim say, and toss us down. Yet I have reason to believe this, the great satanic blasphemy, is true. First, we are here voluntarily. We did not sin, and we were not punished. We elected to descend. Why? To infuse the divine into the lowest strata of creation in order to halt its decomposing, the sinking of its lower realm. This points to a primordial crisis in creation, in the total macrocosm. The yin form was splitting away from the yang form. In conventional terms, heaven, the upper realm, and earth, lower realm, were separating. Carrying the lives within the lower away from their upper form counterparts. This can be viewed as Godhead itself falling apart into its yin and yang, two halves, with the lower form universe as God expressed physically in time and space. The solution was for the divine yang to follow the lower realm down, permeating it, and thus reuniting the cosmos. And then they became drugged and intoxicated sparks of light, losing their true nature and mission. Upon encountering these cryptic clues, the forgetful sparks of the upper realm, now prisoners in and of the lower realm, remember, regain their powers and faculties, and link back with the upper realm and the light god. They are the light in pluriform, his way of invading the lower realm in disguise. The light god, the divine, has now crucially occupied critical stations in the sinking lower realm and begins the reannexing of it back into the totally composed of both realms. The sinking ceases. The master magician is stripped of his autonomy and assimilated to the yang part of the Godhead as its passive counterpart, and once more there is one macrocosm ruled by the yang, or active, creative light god, assisted by the now receptive yin dark side. The divine has triumphed at all levels. The prison is burst, and the vast light-filled garden kingdom restored as the home of all creatures. These now whole creatures, composed equally of yin and yang, are what I term homoplasmates. The yin part is home, as we know ourselves to be now only, and the light or yang part is the plasmate or energy part versus the physical. Thus renewed and complete microcosms mirroring the renewed and complete macrocosm are achieved. Reality is imparted to the otherwise irreal lower realm, and the upper realm now extends physically into the realm of matter. The integrity of the Godhead is restored. Its two halves function in harmony, and the primordial split or crisis is resolved, healed. This is a view compounded of Zoroastrianism, Brahmanism, Gnosticism, Taoism, and the macro-microcosmos of Hermes, Trismegistus, and other mystery religions, and not very much of Orthodox Christianity. Christianity can be added if the pluriform microsparks of light are considered plural saviors or Christs comprising a single mystical corpus that is distributed widely in time and space in the dark realm, but possessing only one psyche that is somehow also God, the Yang or Light God. I have read the above cosmology over and find no fault in it. In fact, I am amazed. It is, in a sense, acosmic and certainly Gnostic, but the Taoist overlay is novel and pleasing. The Taoist overlay redeems it from the flaws of conventional dualist religions and the problems therein. Instead of stressing moral aspects, good versus bad, it stresses epistemological, real versus irreal, which I can understand. The lower realm sinks not because it is corrupt or evil or somehow has rebelled, but because it is the nature of yin to sing, just as it's the nature of yang to rise. The pre-Socratics were aware of this in their model of the winnowing fan and the concept of the vortex. Yang must assimilate yin to keep the totality intact. Yang must renounce its natural tendency to rise and must descend. It cannot expect yin to rise because yin is not wise. It is only nous, N-O-O-S, and I don't know the meaning of nous, that can understand that it must compensate against its own natural tendencies and do what is unnatural to it. Yin is, so to speak, thick, unthinking, not nous, now he has parenthesis mind, so nous means mind, but soma, body. Nous and soma, or psyche and soma, are the total universe orgasm. So he's saying the universe is a huge orgasm based on psyche and soma. Descending into the yin realm is a sacrifice on yang's part, which through its bright or wise nature, it realizes it must make. But it pays a great cost in terms of suffering, loss of memory and identity, abilities and faculties. It becomes pseudo-yin, literally disguised in the yin realm as if it were actually yin, even to the point of forgetting until reminded that it is not. This is the agony we face here in this irreal and dense yin realm, we who are yang traces. This is not our home. We are voluntary exiles here. Alienated and alone. Violating our own natures for a salvific purpose. A necessary purpose. Yin would not understand this. And until anesthesis sets in for us, we, in our distress, do not understand the reason either. Eventually, it will be revealed to us. Meanwhile, we ache with longing for our proper home, dimly remembered, but deeply felt for. Thus, we suppose we are being punished. It feels like punishment. and we make the error of assuming we have sinned. On the contrary, we have renounced joy now to produce greater joy later, for the good of all creation. We are the Godhead itself, suffering the need to be what it is not, to ensure the ultimate stability of krasis, another word I don't know, the unity of love. Moral. It is the ethical requirement placed on the Yang traces by their own bright nature to abandon their natural tendency to rise, to escape what is heavy and dark and sinking. They must go in pursuit of the falling part of the cosmos for the benefit of those and that which otherwise would be lost. This is the highest law, to violate one's own nature for another's good, and the most difficult and painful law to fulfill. Because of this need, there is distress in the cosmos, distress for the innocent especially. My cosmology simply presents it as a fact. To escape it, we would have to allow the cosmos to decompose. Could we do that? The tragedy is that by the very nature of the sacrifice we make, we are occluded from knowing why. This is part of our sacrifice, our yang understanding. We must take on the dullness of yin to save the cosmos. We sacrifice the knowledge of why we sacrifice and assume guilt, spurious guilt, in its place. This is asking a lot. But consider who we really are, or once were and will be again. Who else can do it? There is no one else. There is only yin, which does not know. The part of the organism that knows must help the part that doesn't know. But this means abandoning its own knowing. It becomes what it helps, a dreadful irony, one that hurts. But it is only temporary, just for a little while, and then we go home for all eternity. So, on that note, let's do our own exercise here of uniting yang and yin, uniting the physical world with those higher worlds, and calling the light, and realize that Philip Dick was probably talking about us and what we're doing on this line. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person on this line, and that any negativity be taken to the higher realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in this flow of energy, this invisible energy that radiates throughout our universe, reaching us from the center of our own galaxy, flowing through our solar system, connecting with each of the planets, and finally, moving through the outer energies of our planet, Earth, through our bodies, and anchoring it to the center of the Earth. each of us volunteering at this moment to be part of the anchoring of those energies from these higher dimensions in this realm. We invite the Elohim and Ra and all energies, all intelligences in other realms who are operating in the law of one, service to others, to join us, to help us, stay uplifted, to help us stay in the awareness of why we are here, to help us feel the connection with those invisible realms, knowing that when we do, we are transforming life around us. We are awakening the sleeping yin. Each of us has the ability to do that. Each of us is remembering. We are remembering. We are becoming a member of that part of us which is invisible. And we are living in connection with it. We now have this great light, this source of energy that is the original creative energy of our universe, connected to us right now. We are part of it. It's not them and us. It's all us. And we now can use our intention to recreate this realm for whatever level we can for the highest good of all concerned. So we see this light descending, using us as anchors into this realm and lifting the vibration wherever it doesn't violate free will. We send this energy to the Middle East, to Washington, D.C. We ask for the support of those sources that are in group energy form on the other side of the veil to work with our realm. To do interventions in this realm for the highest good of all concerned. To help us hold back fear as we work with them and they work with us. You see this energy descending on major cities, on Washington, on New York, in Miami, in Los Angeles, St. Louis. Think of the cities right now. You are the projection of this energy right now. Uh-oh. I think we're off of BBS, so we're going to say goodnight. And I'm sorry I ran late. I have to get used to our call stops at 6:50. Please visit us at higher-vision.org. Please visit theradiantzone.com. And we're going to take a about 30 seconds of silence. I'm going to unmute everybody, and we'll do a calling in of the light.